Hi, Kevin Murphy here. You're listening to Conversations with Kevin, a show about innovation, creativity, product, and purpose. It contains all the ingredients that make up what Kevin Murphy is and what we stand for. So I'm Kevin Murphy, and this is Conversations with Kevin. Hi, everyone. I'm Kevin Murphy, and this is Conversations with Kevin. Salons have been a long part of community landscape, and they have always been a snapshot of the area they live in. Hairdressers are one of the few industries that have the right to touch people, which is a very sensitive issue these days. But today I want to talk to you in other ways about how salons provide safe spaces and touch people in other ways. I also want to look at how salon leaders and stylists can protect themselves and their teams and build some resilience. We know that stylists are often unofficial therapists and clients disclose because they feel safe. Modern day inclusive safe spaces do not discriminate based on gender or race or belief. Yet COVID-19 means we've had to up the ante on safety and not just emotional safety. A few short months ago, it would have been difficult to imagine PPE screens in salons, but now here we are. So today I have some special guests. I would like to have an open conversation around these concepts and more. So welcome Dr. Connie Henson, author of Brainwise Leadership, a book that explains practical neuroscience and how to survive and thrive at work. Connie is the founder and managing director of Learning Quest. So Connie, hi, how are you?
I'm great, Kevin. Thanks for asking me to be here today.
No worries. Today, we also have the pleasure of Sandy Chong, the founder of Newcastle Hair Salon Suki, Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Hairdressing Council and a Director of the Council of Small Businesses Organisations of Australia. The Australian Hairdressing Council sets the standards for salons and represents the professional hairdressing industry nationally. Sandy regularly appears on news programs and works with the government on how to represent salons as hairdressers in general. Sandy is a formidable voice in our industry and, like me, started her career as a hairdresser. So, hi, Sandy. How are you going?
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me here. Thank you.
Happy to have you. So, and last but not least, we have our headmaster for Kevin Murphy, Nathan Gorman, a salon owner and part of our education network.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Connie. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi, Nathan.
So I wanted to start with how salons are thought of as safe spaces in the community, and salons are literally a space where you can let your hair down and offload. Connie, you are not a hairdresser, but you are interested in salons in this way. So can you outline this interest and where it has taken you?
Yeah, sure I can. So, you know, for me, I have always been interested in just the ways that human beings help each other. And I'm also really interested in kind of the language that we use. I mean, for example, Kevin, you use this word, let your hair down. And to me, that, you know, it suggests that we can let go of the pretense. We can just be ourselves. And, you know, the implication is that you're not going to be negatively judged, that you're going to be accepted. And from my perspective, salons are safe places. They're places where clients are encouraged to feel good about themselves. And you know, that's just kind of part of the whole atmosphere, as, you know, coming from a client perspective, a customer perspective.
So, Connie, I so agreed. You know, I've always had fun with, you know, with our clients at Suki, and I've been hairdressing for over 40 years. And I have to say, I've become really good friends with so many clients. And, you know, I've watched them come through their relationships and then their marriages and their births of all their babies and, you know, family deaths and sicknesses, divorces, affairs, you name it. We form a relationship with people, don't we? And, you know, I think one of the great things about hairdressing is how much fun you do have with people and how you build those relationships.
You know, it's interesting. It's like if you talk about kind of, it's almost a developmental thing, because you would see people like their whole lives sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then even when you see the babies grow up and they have their babies, oh, and I've become a grandma hairdresser. Oops.
Is it fair to say that salons unofficially contribute to the well-being of society as a whole?
Well, you know, to me, Kevin, I think they do, and like in a few different ways. I mean, for one, salons are a business, and they provide a much needed and appreciated service in the communities. And it's a, you know, so it's a, salons employ people in a profession that they can feel proud of their work. I mean, just some of the things that Sandy was talking about, it's like, who wouldn't feel good about being in a profession where you build those relationships over the years and you kind of, you know, travel that ground together with people. And they, you know, they exist in like virtually every community, and, you know, different communities, salons are different. They fit in, they reflect the people that live there and work there. But, you know, like in my mind, it's even more than those things. It's kind of back to the safe space that you talked about before. It's, I think about salons as one of the few businesses or establishments in a community that, you know, people can go into and, you know, even when they're, or especially when they're not looking or feeling their best, and they can reasonably expect to walk out looking and feeling better.
I think that's exactly the point. I mean, people do come into the salon expecting to feel better, but it is also an expectation of feeling better emotionally because they're catching up with their friends. I mean, catching up with a friend is a really great thing to do for how your brain works and your emotion. But conversely, you've got to understand us hairdressers, Connie, we're catching up with a lot of friends in one day.
Yeah.
So, Sandy, you still have a salon, but do you think that salons have taken their rightful place in society? And what would you say about the importance of salons being a safe space?
Yeah, so Kevin, you know, Connie and also Nathan spoke about, you know, communities and being like-minded with your friends in a hairdressing salon. And I think that salons are seen as a safe place for women. And especially in today's society, unfortunately, domestic violence does come up. And salons are seen as a place where they do feel safe, where there is non-judgment as well in a salon, because I think creative people are just so much more accepting of different differences in others, don't you agree? And so I think that, you know, when we look at salons, they are a safe place, they're a fun place, but then if you just want to chill, then you can do that as well.
And Nathan, this safety has now become literal with COVID-19. Can you tell the listeners how that's been and also what are the psychological safety needs that have gone away?
Well, I think that one of the first things we've had to stay on top of that because they've actually grown in a lot of ways. I mean, we had to make sure that physical safety was met, and then we needed to address the psychological safety later. And I mean, for me, and I know Sandy did as well, that's one of the reasons I actually shut the salon down for 6 weeks. People didn't feel safe in either way. And that was actually my staff, and that was actually my clients as well. So writing the always by your side package for us at KM was quite cathartic and looking at that mental health and all of that kind of stuff, because we address mental health and give the tips and tricks and resources that salons need in the back room.
Mm-hmm. And Sandy, with the new lockdown in Melbourne, you must have been very, very busy. So how are salons faring at the moment and what kind of work are you doing?
So I think with this lockdown compared to the first wave, you know, salons are much more prepared. Plus there was a bit of a lead up and, you know, with the more and more cases that were being announced, you know, before stage four. And so I think the salons were not as surprised and they were more prepared. Now the regulations this time though for stage four were not actually announced until, you know, an hour after. So everyone was a bit confused. But I think that from an AHC perspective, we've kept everybody up to date. We've made sure that the information that they get is correct, because I think probably one of the issues with, you know, with social media, love social media, but boy, some of the information on there can be really wrong. And so I think from an AHC perspective, the one thing that we've really focused on is making sure that everybody is well informed, because I think one of the frustrations with COVID is the, you know, the confusion about everything. So making sure everybody knows and understands what they need to do, because, you know, God, we really do get slammed with some questions that have been answered 100 times, I might add, but we do get slammed with a lot of questions.
I mean, Sandy, for me and my salon and for my partner Alex's salon, you were absolutely a guiding light. And the fact that that's actually your social media page that was a guiding light, it was you a lot of times. You helped us so much. So I know that the guys in Melbourne, it must be quite hard to go into this, but they are better prepared. And that's because of all the resourcing that you put out in that beginning time.
Yeah, I think we made a real effort right from day one. And I think because of my associates, it certainly helps to make sure that the right information went out really quickly, because there was so much confusion. And, you know, no one had really experienced this before. You know, obviously the pandemic was the first. And so knowing that hairdressing was not given a government directive to close when in every other country it actually did close, it was very confusing. And there were so many different opinions, so many different emotions, high emotions, as well, as you know. And so getting the right information out and also looking for the right information rather than listening to the friend of the friend of the friend who has an aunt who has a friend, which made a real difference, you know. for everyone as well. Yeah. Mm.
Okay. So Connie, what are some of the psychological effects lockdown can have on a staff or staff who are unable to work?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of things that could happen. And I'm going to kind of jump off of what Sandy and Nathan were saying too, that for the staff as well as clients, it's like that sense of control that comes from getting the right information. And, you know, to the point you made, Sandy, it's like, and saying it over and over again, because when people are afraid and they're unsure, there's a lot of uncertainty, it just doesn't process. It just does not go in our brains. And so we need to hear it many times and really clearly. But there's other effects, too, that I think the lockdown can have on staff. I mean, for one, there's the financial insecurity, you know, that's created for people when they're not able to work. And that's a piece of it, I think. Obviously, you know, we all need financial security. But the other is, I think even beyond that, is that we are, you know, a primary need for human beings is this ability to make a valuable contribution and to be valued for that. It's a basic human need. And when we're denied that, it's heartbreaking. And it doesn't matter what our profession is, what our skills are, you know, we want to do that thing. We want to provide that for other people. Another piece is the what I call the kind of familiarity piece. You know, when we have the people we work with, and you know, Sandy and Nathan, you both talked about earlier of even your clients that you have year after year. These are people that we come to know, our colleagues that become friends. There's a real predictability about that, and that working provides a, you know, it's where we go, it's what we do, and when that familiarity's taken away from us, it's just like it pulls the rug out from under us. And then I guess there's one other piece that I think is important is this, I think work provides a source of identity for us. I mean, if you think about it, you know, you meet someone socially, you meet them at a party or what have you. One of the first things you ask or that you are asked is, what do you do? And when we lose that ability to, you know, to be that thing, particularly when it's unexpected, it's part of what defines us. And so it feels like a personal loss, a personal kind of loss of our identity. So I think there's heaps of things just from a pure work point of view that are well beyond just the financial piece, which is probably the first thing we think about.
Okay. So Nathan, you quoted in your Reboot Reopen package that you think salons need to take care of all the variables around COVID-19, so to become symbols of wellness and not just sickness. So what did you mean by that?
Well, it's always a bit of a wordplay with me, as you know, Kevin, but really the thing the thing was that to be well, we wanted to take care of physical safety and mental safety, and then we wanted to actually give salons a tool that they had never known that they needed or never used before, which was actually a risk assessment. So actually be able to do that. I mean, a lot of industries, and Sandy would argue that we're probably meant to do risk assessments in hairdressing, but we don't necessarily do that so much. And so this kind of all of that and all of those things lead me to wellness, because if we take care of all of those things and in a risk assessment kind of way, we can actually say that we're doing everything we can to be well. So it's a little bit of a wordplay, but also I don't know how you feel about this, Sandy, but I'll say that my staff have actually been healthier this winter than any other winter due to all of the extra measures and the hand sanitising, and there's so many things that are going to stay.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they say that, you know, on the whole, just as a country, we're something like 90% down in cases of flu. And it's because we are so much more conscious of just washing hands and, you know, just hygienic practices. We've not had one girl off actually this year with a cold, and that is very, very unusual. So, you know, I agree with you. Those hygienic practices have certainly helped.
I've also noticed a shift to wellness in general throughout this pandemic. So Connie, what is happening here and why are we reacting this way?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, Kevin, because I've actually noticed the same thing, and I've thought a lot about it. And I think in some ways COVID-19 is, it's kind of given us all a scare, and it's reset our perspective. When I think back, my previous work as a clinician, I specialized in working with people who had some pretty big medical challenges, you know, things like burns and spinal cord injuries, brain injuries. And what I found is when people who had those kind of life-threatening experiences and challenges, they would talk about getting kind of the reset button pushed. It's like we start to realize what's actually important to us. And often it's health. We focus on being healthy and our well-being and our relationships. That's the kind of thing that people, when they get that button push, that reset button, then they start thinking about those. And I also think, and I'll put that together with the kind of the physical and the psychological piece. I think it's interesting, Sandy, that you mentioned that, you know, we've had a lot less flus and colds this year. Even though there is probably more distress for some people around mental health, we've certainly seen a lot of that in the media. And I think that is true, particularly when people are isolated, when they've lost their jobs, those kinds of stressful experiences. But the other side that we don't see so much in the media is, but I think is happening, and certainly I'm seeing that with clients and colleagues, is that people experiencing higher well-being because they're taking care of themselves. They're not rushing from one thing to the next, and I must achieve this, I must do that. But they're focusing in on relationships, they're focusing on family, and on things that matter. And that's well-being.
Look, I will agree. And I think that I think it's really interesting because the beginning of COVID was a very different, scene, because everyone can realize that COVID took control of all we know. And, the uncertainty, especially in business, of losing your business, losing your staff and your clients was a very real scenario. And so the AHC actually did a video on the five stages of grief. And it's really interesting what you say, Connie, because you can actually see, communities going through these five stages. And the five stages of grief, as you know, you can jump from one stage to another. And, and you can just shift around. And those stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And in hearing what you're saying about the self-care, I think a lot have gone into that acceptance of, well, this is where we are, so I'm going to take good care of myself. And, we've got to make the best of this. This is it. It's not going to disappear on the 31st of December. So how are we going to make this work for me and for my business and for my teams, et cetera, et cetera? And so, there's been a real shift, I think, in the thinking, don't you think? Since COVID first was announced and out there and sort of to where we sit today in our businesses or even in our homes.
I just want to make a comment on what Sandy was saying. It's like that I think there really has been that shift. And you talked about about businesses. And I run a small business, not a salon, but a small business as well. And that has been my personal experience and also with my clients, that real shift about how we think about the business and the people that work for it and creating safe spaces, and focusing on those relationships and how do we support people? How do we support each other through this time? Because it's probably not going to go away really soon. We have to work and think differently.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Connie. So from the point of view of a doctor, so could you explain to us about psychological safety and how to further this and how important can salons and stylists be here?
Well, psychological safety is similar to physical safety. I mean, it's all about removing the sense of threat, about removing fear from the environment. Neuropsychologically, when we don't feel safe, there is a part of our brain that becomes active. And it's essentially trying to assess the level of danger. It's trying to prepare us to either fight it off or run away from it, whatever it is that's threatening us. It tries to figure out what it is and what to do about it. And the interesting thing is when you look at kind of neurologically what's going on, is that from a brain's perspective, it doesn't matter whether it's physical or psychological. The brain deals with it in the same way. So, you know, mm-hmm. if we work in an environment where mistakes are judged harshly, or we're excluded for being different or having a diverse perspective, well, that environment is not a healthy environment. It's not safe. In an environment that is safe, what is conducive to learning, you know, that values people, tries to help people be their best rather than competing for the one best answer or the one best person, that creates a sense of safety. And I think it's so important. And I think, Sandy, Nathan, both of you are picking up on this idea, and that you've certainly done this in your businesses as salon leaders, is, you know, creating and really cultivating a safe work environment for employees. And then that allows them to help create that environment for clients. And what the research shows is it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of business or industry you're in, is, but when people feel safe, both physically and psychologically, they have higher performance. They're better able to learn. They're better able to remember. And there's more opportunity for collaboration and for creativity as well as other things.
I think that's amazing.
Connie, can I just ask you, how come psychologists have such soothing voices? Because I feel completely nurtured by you at the moment.
Yes.
I do that. I just, maybe I need to go to a psychologist more. They're so soothing. Yeah,
it's
and
true.
I think hairdressers are so soothing. No, when I go into a salon, I just end up feeling great.
No, did you have soothing voice lessons at uni or something? Like,
I'm sure they did. Yeah.
They had come to this lesson. It's the soothing voice one.
Perfect.
So, Sandy, how aware is the AHC of Salons providing this unofficial caregiving service? And have you been working with any groups or governments to get the message out there?
So, you know, throughout the entire year, the Australian Hairdressing Council and COSBOA, so COSBOA is the Council of Small Business Organisations for Australia, their members are actually associations that represent small business. So there's about 25 associations that meet actually every Friday, and we discuss small business and, you know, how small business is going, you know, within the environment of COVID and the effects of business, not just to the employers, to the employees, etc. And everything is covered. Our guests who are on every week from the Fair Work Ombudsman, the Australian Taxation Office, the Treasury, the Small Business Ombudsman, various different ministers and senators. And, you know, we would meet someone every week when it comes to a government or bureaucrat to talk about small business. And the one thing that always comes up in every single discussion every week is actually mental health and the support that's mm-hmm. needed for everyone. And especially, you know, I mean, everyone does need help at the moment with COVID, but especially small business owners, it comes up all the time. Because as you said earlier, Connie, financially, you know, there is a huge financial anxiety at the moment on, you know, am I going to lose everything that I've just spent years building? Am I going to lose my business? And so these are all the discussions that we have every week. We're in touch with all the states as well as to what they're doing when it comes to small business and also mental health.
I think it's really cool that you're doing that, Sandy, that that's in existence, because, you know, there's a lot around, you know, employees and how do we keep them safe. But the actual owners and managers of small businesses are, you know, are struggling as well. And it's like you said, it's like for people who run small businesses, it's like it's everything. Sometimes people will put their life savings, certainly their life's work and their hopes and dreams into them.
Oh, totally. And I think also too, you know, as a hairdresser, when you go to work, you love your work and you do what you do and you're creative and, you know, it is an incredible career of choice. But when you become a business person, you know, you could be an incredible hairdresser, but the difference is there's so many hats. And I actually wrote an article on how many hats you have to wear. And I think it takes up something like 12 lines of how many hats you have to wear when you're a business person. And very few business people actually go into business, you know, thinking, oh, gee, I think I'm going to be an accountant, a bookkeeper, and I'm also going to be really good with banking and marketing and advertising and, you know, what to put in a first aid box even and how to deal with toxic staff. I mean, the list can go on. They're just good at doing hair and making people feel amazing, but then they have to have all these other skills. So I hear what you're saying. On top of everything else, you know, they've got to have all those skills. And then with COVID, they now have to understand infection control, work health and safety, regulations, you know, don't get into trouble. And also I think probably one concern that I always voice is being bullied by clients to do their hair when they're not meant to be doing it. That's probably one of my concerns.
I agree with that, Sandy. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely a thing.
Have clients been bullying the hairdressers?
Yes, yes. And even in Melbourne during this lockdown recently.
Totally. Yeah.
They're saying, you can come to my house.
Yeah. They try and convince them that the regulation around it is, one person can come to the house, and they're offering them, you know, up to 3 times in cash, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand that you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And it's like, well, you know, Victoria is where it is because there are a lot of people who just didn't behave. And that's why they're in stage 4. And so, yeah, there is a lot of bullying. And because hairdressers are so soft-hearted and they're nurturing and, you know, they are wonderful people. And so, you know, they get bullied so easily. And, you know, I'm very conscious of that.
Okay, so I want to bring it back to mental health again. So I want to ask you, Sandy, so who does the AHC partner with around mental health?
So over the years, the AHC have used a few different companies. One of them is Every Mind. Another one that we align with is Leanne Faulkner at Fortitude at Work. But we mainly use Tina Winchester from the Careers Development Centre. And over the last few years, the AHC has actually presented quite a few mental health workshops. You know, that these workshops will talk about, well, what is it that really does make you happy? What do you have to put in place to, you know, recognise what does make you happy and what does self-care and mental health look like? And we also had full-day workshops with very small groups, though, where we covered anxiety and depression and substance abuse and, you know, we actually covered suicide. And those were incredible workshops because mental health is really not understood. And, you know, we need to sort of take away that stigma that's attached to it when someone is not feeling well. And so these workshops were fantastic. We took them around the country.
I'd like to give a plug to the AHC here because Sandy was very quick to take this on in terms of mental health of staff. And it is one of the, whenever I get together with other salon owners, it could be like at a Kevin Murphy branded event and we're discussing our teams and our salons, mental health is always the thing that comes up at the front. And so it's been a great resource.
Oh, thank you. We are actually working on a new program too, by the way.
So, Sandy, let us know what events have you held? And I know there's been a lot of digital content, but I understand that you've created workshops, as you just mentioned. So can you outline some of these?
So some of the things that we're having right now, I guess, is because we're very conscious that, you know, stage 4 in Victoria, we're conscious of everyone's mental health and community is really important. And as we know that when we think about mental health and being in touch with people, communicating is probably number one and just having that interaction. So we're having some fun things at the moment, I'll be honest. You know, we've had cook-offs with Tom Donato and Marie Uva, and we've got Melissa Maskey with Joey Scandizzo next week. So we've been having cook-offs and just some business advice. The AHC has got a lot of resources, though, including videos called Reality Bites, et cetera, and things like that. So we have facilitators that court every single member in Melbourne or Victoria for that matter as well. So we're keeping in touch.
Look, I think all of those things that you're talking about sound really fantastic. It'd be great if every industry was doing that, those kinds of things, because it will definitely make a difference. That constant communication, the constant connection, it's going to help people through COVID, but it's going to build a foundation going forward for whatever we have to deal with.
So really the old saying, touching more hearts than hair, actually is true. So we really do provide a safe space and we build genuine relationships with our clients. So
yeah, I think so. I think when you touch people literally, and let's look at who actually has permission to touch people, it's generally health professionals, and then there's probably beauty, hairdressing and family members, like loved ones. And so people do have that tendency to let you in mentally and let you know what's going on. And that's a big part of it.
So Sandy and Nathan, can you give us examples in your salons and an outline of what this means to you, or even any stories you have or you've heard from your team or your clients?
Well, I think for me, I've had a fair bit of emotional or domestic abuse or violence. I've had that. I've had everything from I think I'm transgender. Actually, it's quite extraordinary, really. Affairs is a common one, as Sandy could probably say. You do hear a lot. And you also hear some really... We tend to know when clients aren't in a good headspace, well, because we know them, and we tend to really feel that energy. So it's a lot of stuff.
I totally agree, Nathan. And you know, they it's almost like they feel flat, isn't it? When you have someone who you've known for such a long time, and when they're flat, you know something's not quite right. But I think probably the one thing that hairdressers do, the ones that do really well with their clientele, the one thing that they do well is listen. And very few people can listen well nowadays. I don't know if you notice, but most people sort of talk over you. But those that can really listen are the ones that build the best clientele. And I think probably from my experience, what I loved is knowing that I would have someone young, and then you'd watch them through their relationships, and then they marry, and then next they've got their kids, and you watch them grow, and you watch their careers grow, and you watch them develop, and then they get married, they have their children. And so it's a very long relationship that we have. And, you know, through those relationships, you do hear all the things that are sometimes not quite right. And look, you're there to listen, and you're there to give some light advice. And of course, if something is not right, then you send them off to the professional that they should see. But you hear everything, don't you, Nathan? I don't think I can think of anything that I haven't heard, actually. It can be very entertaining sometimes. Yeah.
So Connie, in your opinion, what tools or training do you think the stylists need in this context?
I'll build on what Sandy and Nathan have said, because I completely agree that a lot of it is about the listening and being there with a person. I'll pick up on even what I said earlier. It's like we are social beings. Our brains are absolutely designed to connect with other people. You know, we think about these basic needs like food, water, shelter, and yeah, of course they're important, but let's think about how human beings are built. Think about a baby. Which baby can get its own food, its own shelter? The first most essential need a human being has when it's born on earth is to connect with others who will care for it. And even once we're adults, I mean, we all know it. We do better when we're in groups, when we're families, when we're with other people. We need to create safe relationships. And the cool thing is our brains are built to do exactly that. We have entire systems within our brains whose whole purpose is to enable us to connect with others. You know, another of the really important basic needs, and we've already kind of touched on this too, is this need for control. I don't usually have to convince people that we have a need for control, but it's absolutely important. We feel safer when we can make some predictions about what's going to happen next. You know, if I do X, Y will happen. It gives us a sense of control. And that's one of the reasons COVID has been so difficult for people, is because there's so much uncertainty. Like, even if we know something unpleasant's going to be there, if we can predict it, you get an injection from the nurse and, you know, she or he will say, okay, get ready. It's going to hurt a little. It's like that's easier to bear than if we have unexpected pain or unexpected discomfort. And trust and fairness, that's another pretty important part of control. And, you know, some of the things that you talked about, Sandy, that you guys have been doing, building a sense of trust and even just the transparency that helps help people feel more in control. And I already talked about contribution. I could probably talk forever about how important it is this, we have this built-in desire, this need to make a valuable contribution, to be valued for it. A lot of times when I'm working with leaders in corporates, and they'll say, what do I do to make my people accountable? How do I make sure they, you know, contribute? I said, well, mostly stay out of their way. They want to do it. We intuitively know that because we're so social, contributing to the good of the whole is important. And human beings just sort of know that.
You know, Connie, I so agree with what you were talking about then. And, you know, while you were talking with your soothing voice, you know, I was just thinking about all the things like communication and community, and that whole trusting that you were talking about is so important, because when it comes to human connection, and when it's what they want is they actually want to be heard, but they also want to trust that what you're saying to them is not going to be repeated. Do you know what I mean? And so I think trust plays a huge part. And I think that a lot of people do actually stay with their hairdressers because it is all about trust. And it is all about that human connection. And it's all about that communication. And it's one-on-one. It's very special.
Yeah. It's very relationship-oriented, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. You know, I guess the whole idea is supporting each other, isn't it? It's all about support. And it's supporting someone the best that you possibly can in that moment.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one thing I think COVID has in some ways really brought out. It's like the human spirit around helping each other. I think we want to do it. And usually we're looking for ways to, how can I be helpful to the others on this planet?
This is Conversations with Kevin, and it's time for our product spotlight.
Hi, Nathan Gorman here, Headmaster for Kevin Murphy, and welcome to our Conversations with Kevin Product Spotlight. Today I have Kate Reed, Design Director for Colour Me, and Wade Blackford, Design Director for Styling. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Nate.
Hi. We wanted to actually let you know about heated defence and why we made a heat protection foam in this form. Heated Defence is weightless. It's a leave-in foam, as I said, that protects your hair against damage and heat associated with using lots of hot tools or hot tools. It can be applied to wet or dry hair just before using a hot tool, if you like. And it generally we say 1 to 3 pumps, depending on the hair length. But Wade, how did we arrive at Heated Defence?
Well, we actually had a plan to change all of our leave-in products to contain heat protection. So heat protection up to 230 degrees Celsius or 450 degrees Fahrenheit. And when we began to make these changes, when we actually tested the products, we found that results varied from product to product once we actually added the heat protection in, and it was diluted into the various creams and lotions. It became less effective with each product offering and gave different results. So that's how we ended up going, we need to make one product for heat protection.
Great. It sounds a little complicated.
It was.
Yeah. If you think of heat protection like sunscreen, there's many BB creams and new foundations on the skincare market. A lot of them contain sunscreen. But if you're going to prolong the amount of time in the sun, especially on a daily basis, you'd not be banking on your, you know, daily moisturizer or foundation to protect your skin from the harmful rays. So it's the same with heat protection. I really use a lot of heat on my hair and love it flat and straight. So for someone like me, this is like essential product.
Great. That's a really interesting take. I like that metaphor, Kate. So in today's world, clients often use heated appliances and tools. I mean, you know, pre-pandemic, it was every day. Now they might be extending that out. But there's so many variables that can affect the performance of heat protection. And at Kevin Murphy, as Wade said, we've been strongly committed to creating a product that creates right up to the temperature of the hottest flat iron on the market. Wade, can you tell me, as usual, a bit about the ingredients?
Okay, so from the natural world, we've used sustainable hydrolyzed quinoa protein to maintain the moisture levels in the hair. This also will improve the resilience and repair the surface of the hair. And we've also added organic jojoba oil and castor oil that helps to the natural defense of the hair against future damage as well.
Great, okay. So, you know, just for those science nerds in the listening audience, Heated Defence uses polyquaternions or polyquats that are an ingredient that selectively binds to regions of the hair that need the most protection. Polyquats are good things that help smooth the hair and provide conditioning and protection while forming that shield that's weightless around each hair, so that the surface is protected from heat and mechanical damage, but also so that the surface is refined and the surface actually gets the protection where it needs it. How do we use it, Kate?
Yeah, so heated defense is weightless. So it layers onto damp hair after you wash. So you'd apply your wash and rinse, and then you'd towel dry it really well. You'd put heated defense. It's like the foundation product. So massage it in first and then pick your next Kevin Murphy styling product as you normally would.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So you put it under your styling products, Kate.
Yeah. So it's like your foundation, the first product that you would use on the hair to really help to protect it.
Great. Thank you. So heated defense is as light as air, invisible foam that will provide extreme heat protection, as Wade said, for up to 230 degrees Celsius or 450 Fahrenheit. It's got new technology to deliver that weightless heat protection to that high level for all hair types, time after time. So I'd like to thank Wade Blackford and Kate Reed. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you, Nathan.
And that's our product spotlight on Conversations with Kevin, and we're talking about heated defence. Till next time, guys. Thank you.
Welcome back to Conversations with Kevin. So let's talk about change for a while. So I think I heard you said something earlier, Connie, so that you're saying that why are people so resistant to change?
Yeah, they are. You know, change is hard for people. You know, I talked a little bit about that part of the brain that detects danger and threat. And it's actually kind of a big chunk of our brain. And the way, and that's important. You know, it's a good thing that our brain can do that, because otherwise we'd find ourselves in all kinds of messes that we, you know, could have probably predicted and kept ourselves out of. But because we're all born into different parts of the world, there are different dangers. And so our brains are programmed to pick up on changes as a potential threat. And the reason is, if you think about it, it kind of makes sense. So if I'm safe right now, fine. Nothing's, you know, everything is as it is. But if something in my environment changes, well, I've got to reassess just to ensure that all is well. And so our brains can pick up on changes, and particularly unexpected changes, big contrasts, our brain goes on high alert. You know, I said before, we really like familiarity and predictability. It just feels safer for us. And so uncertainty, you know, changes, unexpected things, that it's putting us in that state of alert and an anxiety, which, you know, funny enough, just the way that our brains work, is that then we don't have the mental capacity to think as clearly. And so that it can be kind of a vicious cycle.
You know, I think the one thing that's permanent in hairdressing is actually change. But, you know, we love change because we're hairdressers and we're creative. But what we don't like is losing control or seeing change in our actual work of business, in our finances, our health or our family. And they're the things that I think were exactly threatened when it comes to COVID. So I hear what you say, Connie, when you talk about danger and threat. And because we're not used to that kind of danger, well, then the amount of confusion and the amount of anger and the amount of fear that was out there with COVID was pretty full on. But, you know, hairdressers are generally used to change, but definitely not that kind of change.
It's so funny what you say, Sandy, because, you know, it's that, and I absolutely agree. Like, most of us like change when we're in control of the change. What we don't like is change that's thrust upon us. That's something that it's like, there's some people, they're thrill seekers in the world. It's a tiny percent that's like, fine, bring it on, I'm happy. But most of us really prefer to be able to predict what's coming our way, unless we're pulling the strings. And then we like it, it's okay.
Yep, agree.
Yes, well, we have had that change thrust upon us. So what is the human reaction to this, and how can we help people with this?
Look, I'll just jump in there. I think one of the really most straightforward things we can do to help people cope, and Sandy's already talked about it, is to let them talk. Because what the research tells us is that simply by labeling our concerns and our emotions out loud, it helps our brains reboot. And the research it's absolutely fascinating. They've done brain scans of people while they describe their worries. And they have them do it, you know, part of the group describes their worries out loud versus another group that's still getting the brain scan. They just think about what they're worried. And what you can see is a difference in the brain activity. When people talk out loud and just simply say, you know, no advice given, just simply say how they felt, you can see the activation in the brain moving from that fear, alert, threat part. I call it the protecting part of the brain. And it moves into the thinking, logical part. And you know, you can think about it like most of us have actually experienced this. You know, you ever been upset? You go to a friend, you go to your hairdresser, and you just talk. And at first you're like just a bit disorganized all over the place. You're not even logical. But as you talk, you can feel your senses return. You know, you can feel kind of, it's like it just kind of, your brain turns back on and you have stronger thinking. And I bet both Nathan and Sandy, I bet you've experienced this as hairdressers or just as colleagues and friends to people, is that someone comes and they start talking to you and they're kind of talking rubbish. You know, they're not even making any sense. But if you listen without judging, without interrupting, without even giving any advice, just listening and being there with them, then you can, like, they start making more sense. It's like their brain reboots. And they can start solving their own problems. And it's an absolute gift. And Sandy, you said earlier, most people can't do it. And you're so right. I've spent half of my career trying to help people learn how to be better listeners. And it's really hard. You know, most people just don't do it very well.
No, and I really think you have to try and hear the words behind the words, you know, the feeling behind the words. And I think that's a real skill if you can close your mouth and really listen to what the words are really saying to you. I think that that's a real skill. And I think that it's a good skill for anyone, you know, to be able to attain, to be able to, you know, sort of be able to develop, I think, in, you know, for anything, really.
Yeah, completely agree.
So, Nathan, with all that's going on, so how have your staff been with this change and this change in general?
Well, I think I'm going to answer that two ways, because a few years ago I decided in the salon that I wanted to create a bit of change, and it was a Saturday morning staff meeting, and I said, today, symbolic of the new things that we are going to adapt to, I'd like everyone to go and move stations. And it was a very big learning curve for me, because I had two staff members that were wailing. I had people fighting over stations, and I didn't realise that doing that one act at a staff meeting was going to cause so much drama. I couldn't. So that taught me that people really, you know, that change is scary for a lot of people as well. I was trying to use change to change how they behaved, but I actually unnerved them before they started work. I think that with everything that's been going on lately with COVID, I think there was a lot of fear around. But I think that what's happening now is they're becoming more conscious of looking after themselves and other people. So I think we spoke about wellness before, and I think that something is good is happening there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have particular spots for your co-workers. Do they all like to work in the one space?
Yes.
They don't like to move around.
And I've had one staff member in that space since I built the salon 15 years ago.
Really?
And no one's getting her out of that corner. Hi, Karen. Love you.
Okay. So, Sandy, what about your team?
Well, actually, every time we moved the salon, I bought the book, Who Moved My Cheese, and made them all read it because, you know, similar thing. They love change, but then they also don't they, which is really funny. Look, with COVID, I will say that my team were really fantastic when it came to COVID, but we also communicated a lot with them. And I think what's important too is, you know, in listening to Nathan and also Connie, listening to the staff, communicating with them, but it's also being able to read them is something very different again, because, you know, some staff will say what they think you want to hear, but you really need to get behind even that. And so, you know, with us this year, we've had a lot of meetings. We've had our Zoom meetings. We've tried to make things fun. We've changed things around. And the biggest change, of course, is not being able to have clients in every single chair. And that in itself is a challenge. But, you know, we're adapting, and we're accepting that this might be how it's going to be for some time. And I guess I allowed my staff to change first, and then I went with the flow for them versus me telling them how it's going to be. I let them make the decision. So I really believe in high involvement is a higher commitment. And so by listening to what they wanted first, even though it was what I wanted, I think they could adapt to the change a lot faster.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So, Connie, so what are the best ways to help people adapt to change here?
Well, I think Nathan and Sandy are really covering it. I mean, two really clear two-way communication is huge, and that deep listening to people, because just like you're saying, it's like sometimes people say what they think you want to hear. And sometimes, you know, they're speaking from kind of the most threat part of their brain. And so we have to just take it slow and really listen deeply. I think we have to be aware of and just manage losses, help people manage the losses. You know, inevitably, change means people will lose some things and gain some things. And I think a lot of times leaders will just try to like pretend like that part's not happening. And that's the opposite. Mm. If we kind of lean into that and hear what those losses are, help people manage them, then it just moves us that much quicker to where we're trying to get to. And then, of course, it's just listen, listen, listen. You know, that's the main one.
Mm.
Yeah. Nathan, have you got anything to comment?
Well, no, I think it's great because it's it's something I've learned, and also I know Connie personally. So Connie taught me that if you wanted to change behavior, you change environment. And so I've used those tools many times.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to do that. I like that. I don't know when I'm going to do it, but I like that.
Yeah, maybe not during a pandemic, Sandy.
No, but I just liked what you said then. So I'm going to write that down and use it.
So now I'm going to touch on the idea of feeling safe. So Connie, what actually is feeling safe, and can we truly make people feel safe?
Yeah, I guess I kind of see that in a few different ways. Well, we've touched on a few things about when people feel threat, when they feel uncertainty. So I'll just kind of add to that and talk about, this is maybe even beyond COVID, but you know, helping people feel safe at work in general. And I think one of the most important things for leaders to focus on is how do we deal with mistakes, which always happen. It's inevitable. There will be mistakes. There will be things that don't go the way we want, or people will do things that we don't like. And if we can truly, it's in some ways sort of cliche to say it, but if we can truly make mistakes an opportunity for learning, it's safer for people. Mm. And so it's, you know, moving away from the punitive, you know, we have to find the blame and then beat up someone for it, to, yes, we have to deal constructively. We have to fix any mess that we make. But most people want to do that. If they've made a mess, they want to fix it. And so as leaders, if we can create the environment that helps them do that, and that they, that then we can all learn from it, that goes a long way to creating a safe work environment for people.
So, actually, Sandy, you seem to be providing a safe space for much of the Australian hairdressing industry. So what do you feel when they talk about safe spaces, and what have you noticed?
Oh, I think that, you know, through this year there's been huge challenges and certainly changes in the Australian hairdressing industry. In creating a safe space, it was really difficult, you know, when COVID was first, you know, at its height in March, April, because hairdressing was not given a government directive to close down. And then they did the 30-minute backflip, if you remember, that we were all meant to do clients within 30 minutes.
30-minute haircuts, yep,
that's right. And 30-minute colours, and, you know, that everyone's trying to get creative on how you were going to do that. And, you know, and so there was a lot of anger, you know, in the hairdressing industry, and there was also a lot of anger with the public, which was really interesting as well. You know, the AHC was really slammed and attacked by the public for allowing hairdressing to open, like it was all our fault. And, you know, because hairdressers cannot social distance as well, then that became very confusing, and the 4-metre rule became very confusing with the social distancing. So I guess for the Australian Hairdressing Council and for our industry, it was just, once again, keeping the communication out there. I don't think I ever worked so hard in my life in April, just communicating with consumers, members of the public, you know, government, as well as, you know, responding to a lot of questions, phone calls, you know, there were lots of messages till 3 o'clock in the morning, literally, just, you know, because people didn't feel safe. But I think the change has been the fact that there are now so many guidelines that everyone is feeling safer. And I think everyone realises that, you know, they have things in place. They have got the resources now to keep themselves safer, and they have a better understanding of COVID as well.
So Sandy, you must have a strong inner strength because you've been navigating a lot of positive and negative things on various blogs and posts. So how do you cope with that negativity?
Do you know, I know that I have a lot of resilience. Like mentally, I have a lot of resilience. And I also do always check in with my own headspace. And I'll continually ask myself, where is my head at? Because I think the one thing that COVID did do was create a lot of out of control emotions, a lot of very highly reactive people. And so I had to make sure that I wasn't one of them, and that I was always very objective and very sensible, and tried to make sure I was thinking with absolute clarity. I was attacked massively by different people. I was told I was a mass murderer for allowing hairdressing to be open. And, you know, and there were those who were very supportive of the OHC stance on the hairdressing industry, and there were those who were not, you know. But I think probably the public attacks were pretty full on. That was interesting because hairdressers were open. Look, I do certain things to make sure my headspace is clear. And I did have some really wonderful people, you know, Nathan's one of them, that really supported me and checked in on me every day, actually. Tom Donato, Kirsty Stafford, Jenny Burns, these are people who were close to me who would ring me every day. And, you know, I did fall apart one time and felt stupid, actually. I fell apart on Minister Michaela Cash. Minister for Small Business and Vocational Education Training. I was standing looking at my own salon on the night we were closing, and I burst into tears speaking to Senator Michaela Cash. And, you know, she said, Sandy, you'll be okay, you'll be okay. And you know what? We closed for 6 weeks and it went really fast, and, you know, it wasn't so bad. Mind you, I worked really hard just with the industry. So in answer to your question, look, I am resilient. I will admit, I know I am. I don't beat myself up. When I do something wrong, I move on. I'm someone that someone will remind me of something that's like, oh, it's history to me. And I move forward really quickly. I think I have to, actually. So
Connie, what would be your advice for anyone navigating this level of pressure that Sandy is seeing?
Look, Sandy has given a great model for how to do it. You know, it's like, you know, first remembering people are afraid and that makes them angry sometimes. And I think it can come out worse and more brutally in social media, or anytime people have a bit of distance. You know, they'll say things that they wouldn't have said to your face. And that sounds like that definitely has happened to Sandy and to others. So the first bit is, you know, just remembering that that's what is happening for people. It's not personal. And that's exactly what, you know, Sandy's describing, looking in our own head and said, how am I going here? I often use the description of, you know, when we go on the plane and they say, apply your own oxygen mask first before you try to help others. And I think that's what we have to do. It's build our own resilience, take care of ourselves. And a couple of the examples that Sandy gave, I think, are fantastic. It's like, one is just checking in, how am I going here? But another is, it's like using the social resources around you. You know, most of us do have people that care about us, and checking in with them. Hopefully they're checking in with us. There's actually a bit of research that says just reminding ourselves that there are people in our lives that love and care about us enable us to endure more pain and enable us to persist longer, which I think is pretty cool. Just the remembering of that. And when you actually have that in the flesh, you know, someone calls you or checks in with you, it makes a huge difference. And one other final thing that I would say is reminding yourself of your purpose. Why are you doing this? You know, when we're in the worst part of our work, the most stressful, we're getting it thrown at us. Just remind, it's like, why am I doing this? What's important about it? And again, what the research tells us is that when we connect with purpose and what's meaningful, we're able to endure more and we feel better. And we actually have a higher sense of well-being just being connected with purpose.
So, Sandy, let's talk about the role of professionalism plays in creating a safe space. Through your work in the AHC, you're a champion of increasing the status of hairdressing as a viable career for people. So why is professionalism and the perception of the industry so important, and how does this help when creating and maintaining a safe space and inclusive spaces?
So the Australian Hairdressing Council has always stood for ethical business practices in business. And I guess one of the things that we're very passionate about is apprenticeships. And we put a lot of work in promoting apprenticeships and promoting hairdressing as a career of choice. But I think the one thing that we always do is we encourage the industry to understand that what we do need to do is teach, train and nurture young people. You know, they're not cleaners, but they are the future of our industry, and they make our industry also sustainable. So it's really important. So I think the perception of the industry, you know, that's the one thing that has to change, is that we really do need to look after these young people, because that's our future.
So one of the mainstays of the Australian Hairdressing Council is providing an evaluation process that develops ethical and sustainable business practice. So what does this mean and what's involved?
Well, do you know what, Kevin? It's really easy to do, and we would hope that every salon in Australia actually does it. It is a checklist, and anyone who's in business, if they do this checklist, they've basically got everything in place that they should have in place to run their business. Now, we look at five standards. We've got management operations, employment practices, marketing, sales, salon presentation, and also salon service. And then we have sustainable practices. And so we feel that these standards represent ethical business practices in the industry. And it also shows a business that they're professional and that they stand out from the rest as well.
I think for me, actually, Sandy, the whole mystery shopper thing is actually a really good way to evaluate staff and to evaluate your salon from an outsider's perspective. I think that that's something really valuable. But also, you were saying before that hairdressers go into it because they're good at hair, and then they find they're an accountant, a bookkeeper, or this and that. It's actually all of those things help you with all understanding what you need to do to run a business that's thriving.
Oh, absolutely. It gives you a bit of a game plan, actually, as to what you should have in place. And if you don't have it in place, well, we've got it there for you anyway. And it also gives, I guess, you know, being a salon, select salon, tells a consumer that you are a professional business. It tells, you know, a potential apprentice that you're a professional hairdresser, professional business. If you are looking at a college as well, we do this for colleges. We also do it for the RTOs, the registered training organisations. And we also have an accreditation process for them as well, which is based on all of their management operations.
So, Connie, I'm going to ask you again from a neuroscience perspective, what are some of the best things we can do to build resilience and help mental health of stylists?
Yeah, I think, you know, in addition to the things that we've been talking about of, you know, just creating a great work environment, creating those connections between colleagues, I think there's a few other things that we know are important just over the long term to build that strong resilience, that underlying strength. And the thing to remember is the brain is part of the body. So what affects our body affects our brain. And the brain is where our resilience comes from. So number one is we need to have good exercise. We all know, everybody knows, you have good exercise for your heart, you know, and for your lungs. It's also amazing for your brain. If you want to have a better memory, exercise. If you want to be smarter, exercise. Even just a little bit makes a huge difference. In fact, we're finding that people who exercise regularly are less likely to have early onset dementia. Another is good nutrition. It's really easy when things are hectic to just not eat well. And good nutrition is good for our brain. Well, my favorite one, because I love to do it, is sleep. Having a good night's sleep makes a bigger difference than you can imagine. Just being able, and it's hard for people sometimes to wind down, particularly at a time like now when it's like people have kind of higher anxiety anyway, there's uncertainty. And it's that terrible feeling if you lie down in bed, you're tired as, but then your eyes pop right back open again.
And you know, I know that one.
Yeah, everybody feels it. Business owners especially, well, all of us. And I think you know, just a couple, I'll give a couple of quick tips on that is one, to have a little bit of a wind down time. And that's not a wine down. It's not alcohol. It's a wind down. Oh. In fact, I'll just touch on that. You know, alcohol, even though, of course, it is relaxing when you take it into the beginning, it can disturb your sleep. About 90 minutes later, it puts a little agitation in your brain. So if you're having trouble sleeping, actually laying off the alcohol, and I say that with great sadness in my heart, but it does, it can help. But having a little bit of time to get off the screens, yeah. the backlit screens are really hard on us. Just do something that's really easy, mm-hmm. really relaxing. The other two things, we've already touched on them, but I'll just reiterate because they're so important. Healthy relationships, good connections with colleagues, friends, family, clients, and meaningful work, reminding ourselves why we're doing what we're doing. That builds our resilience more than anything.
So I also know that the AHC provide resources. So Sandy, did you want to give us an outline of some of the resources that are available for your members? And feel free to give the AHC a plug.
Thanks. Look, the Australian Hairdressing Council have over 300 resources in the library, but our members have access to employment lawyers. We've got a very active and knowledgeable community that, you know, all of our members are part of. We do send out lots of information, you know, not too many EDMs that go out, you know, emails that go out, but we definitely give information that is necessary. And I think one of the main things with the Australian Hairdressing Council, it's just the support because, God, I wish I had the AHC when I started my business. You know, years ago, I would have made a lot more money and I would not have made the mistakes that I've made over the years. So, you know, the whole idea of the AHC is to help support you. We're not a regulator, so we're not there to judge anybody, but we're there to, you know, have your back, I guess. That's what the AHC does. Mm-hmm. But anything that you need to run business is pretty much in our resource library. Thanks.
Okay, that's very good. I mean, I wish the AHC was around when I was running a business because I did a terrible job.
Oh, I did a terrible job too. I know. Like, you open up the business and then, you know, you open up the door and the staff walk in and it all changes. You know, it's not quite what you imagined. Yeah. It was like, oh, my God, what happened to my dream? My dream didn't happen.
Yeah, well, yeah, I still had that dream, but I think that, we were just not prepared on how to run all facets of business. Like when Nathan said, you've got to be an accountant, you've got to be a this, you've got to be a that. You know, who knew? We just want to cut hair. But Connie, I'm going to ask you a question. So what are some of the training platforms and programs that you could have recommended from the Learning Quest, and how do people find you?
Look, one thing I would definitely recommend to listeners is since the pandemic, since the first lockdown in March, we started running free webinars. Every Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock to 10:30, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Australian time. And the whole purpose is to help people cope. And I would say even thrive in response to COVID. Because I absolutely believe even though change can be hard and ambiguity and uncertainty, there's a lot of science behind how do we use that as a springboard for building strength. And Sandy and Nathan have given a lot of examples of that. And so every week, we just talk about little bite-sized bits of science, and then we have a really good conversation around how do you make it practical. So I would invite anyone who's interested. I don't know if I should, is there a way I can just give a link?
Yes, please do.
Okay.
Yeah, give us the website.
Okay, so if you go to academy.learningquest.com.au/courses/, it will take you to the site where you can register for the course. You have to register, but they're completely free.
Okay, great. That's great information.
I've actually done a few of those, Kevin, to tell you the truth. So
have you?
Connie's helped. Okay. Connie's courses are great.
I'm going to log on.
Fantastic. I'll look forward to seeing you guys on Tuesday.
I had a little peek yesterday, actually, on your website. So I had a little shuffle around there and thought, oh, there's some things that I might like to get involved in as well. But I'm going to just move on to another subject that we are currently in the go. We're actually presently, Kevin Murphy is currently at the negotiating table with a group of people called the Dress Code Project. The Dress Code Project is a global initiative that celebrates gender affirming salons and barbershops. It's for LGBTQ's clients, for whether you're transgender, non-binary or gender non-conforming, getting your haircut can create a lot of anxiety. So Nathan, is your salon a member of the Dress Code Project?
Yes, it is. And you really got through all of that quite well, saying LGBTQI, Kevin. I thought that was great. I actually think that the Dress Code Project changed my business. And why it changed my business is because, you know, in hairdressing, we had this whole archaic thing called a lady's cut and a men's cut. And you know, that seems really ridiculous to me right now, because salons should be priced on the amount of time that you spend, not the gender of the person whose hair you're cutting. But a lot of the point of sale systems, or a lot of the software companies and everything, were very much set up to push people into those binary kind of male, female. So actually going through the Dress Code Project's information packs and looking at my business, and it was a number of years ago we did that, I think was incredibly valuable. And we've gained clients through it as well.
Great. So, Sandy, what about Suki? Is your salon a dress code salon?
Yeah, we are a dress code salon, and very proud to be a dress code salon. But we've actually had the same gender pricing for 20 years. We've only ever had one price, so it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of person you are. Well, it's just one price. And so we've never had to have the ladies or the men's cuts or anything like that.
And it sounds so old-fashioned, doesn't it?
I know, it does. I know. And you know what's so much easier on a salon menu? It's just cut, you know, that's it. Yeah. But and all our staff are very comfortable with the fact that we're a dress code salon, and, you know, we do promote that because I think our salon is very non-judgmental, and, you know, we love everyone who walks through our doors with open arms. So it doesn't matter, you know, who you are or what you are, then you're more than welcome in our salon. So, yes, we're a very proud member of the Dress Code Project.
That's great. Great to hear it. So we're going to talk about wellness again. So I want to go back to the concept of wellness. So, Connie, are we wired to feel well?
It's a great question, and we absolutely are. We are wired to feel pleasure. And the things that contribute to that, number one, connection with other people, feeling included, feeling valued, as well as physical pleasure, actually releases neurochemicals in our brains that feel good. You know, the things I talked about before, like exercise, nutrition, sleep, they contribute to the overall feeling good. And we get a lot of pleasure from helping others. And there's a lot of research that shows, you know, generosity, be it with time, money, or effort, makes us feel better. And, you know, if it's okay, Kevin, I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'm going to read a little post that came across my LinkedIn the other day. And it was so interesting because I was planning for, you know, to talk with you guys today. And I get this, this post in my feed, which is a letter from a customer to a hairdresser. And it's just an absolutely amazing, it's just a short piece, but I'll read it and hopefully I can read it well. Dear Sarah, this is a little bit awkward, but I've waited a really long time to pass this on to you. My wife and I came in for haircuts shortly before Christmas last year. My wife was suffering from dementia, and you treated her as though you'd been working with dementia patients all your life. You let us sit next to each other, and when it came time for her cut, you turned her chair towards me so I could watch her expressions as you cut her hair. It turned out even better than I thought it would. Sadly, she died in March, and that haircut was one of the last best moments of her life. She felt so pretty. She visited the mirror in her bathroom several times during the day and would come out beaming. To see her so happy was priceless. Looking back, it was likely one of a dozen haircuts you gave that day, but it was one which revitalized a woman's sense of self and her singular beauty. I hope you always realize the power of your profession. Mm. And I just read that and thought, how beautiful is that?
That's beautiful.
You know, that'll build resilience.
And that's why we do what we do, right?
It really is.
So, Connie, that was a really beautiful end to our podcast today. So I've got one last question. First of all, Sandy, what do you do to look after yourself?
Well, I am so lucky. I live at the ocean and my whole bedroom wall is the ocean. And so for me, all I have to do is look at that view. And, you know, we have dolphins and we have whales. So I would go for a walk along the beach. I love my family. I love my dog. I kiss my dog a lot. And so that seems to help me. And I guess I like to have a brain holiday. I am someone who loves a good movie or Netflix or whatever. So, you know, so my time out, it's the way I look after myself is a brain holiday and time with my family and dog at the beach, on the beach, everything in front of my house.
I want your life all of a sudden, Sandy, stuck here in the inner west in Sydney.
I count how many times I kiss my dog when I wake up, and it's 15. And then, she just lies there.
I actually have a strange relationship. Well, not a strange relationship with my dog. I have a very beautiful relationship with my dog. And my answer to that would be I actually take the dog walking in the morning. Mm. And I found throughout COVID we were so responding to what was going on at Kevin Murphy in the salon so much that I was literally getting up, sitting down at the desk, not showering and working all day and doing calls and things. And I started to feel quite not right. So in the last few weeks, I've been very clear to put that structure back into my life that starts with exercise and a shower. I mean, you know, who would have thought?
The simple things are often the best.
Yeah. So, Connie, what do you do to look after yourself?
Yeah, similarly, I exercise is really important to me. I get up every morning, have my yoga practice. I usually have, you know, some walking or swimming I get in. I put a lot of effort into relationships because I know they sustain me when I need them and they're a joy when I don't need them. Like both Nathan and Sandy, I like to have some downtime. And you guys will love this, but one of my favorite things to do is to get my hair done. Very relaxing. Yeah.
In the light of Black Lives Matter and other kinds of discrimination, it's really important to highlight that salons are often the heart of the community, a meeting place or somewhere to gather safely. So it's been known for a long time that salons fulfill this role. So my quest today is to help people understand that when they or others feel safe, it's their opportunity to thrive. So I also want you to know that you never have to go it alone. There is always support for when you need it. Hairdressers and salons hold a much greater role in society. They contribute to unofficially to the wellness of the greater public than they realize. So I'm going to say thanks to Sandy, thank you to Connie, and thanks for Nathan for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Kevin.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thanks, Kevin.
Great. Thank you so much, guys. So I'm Kevin Murphy, and this has been Conversations with Kevin.